the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Kieran Cunningham has joined us to just run through some of the best sports books of the year that you may enjoy over the Christmas period. Let's start with, unfortunately, when Donald McRae was in, I was away. I think Will interviewed about his book, The Last Bell, Life, Death and Boxing. Why is this your first choice, Kieran?
Well, it's anybody who knows Donald McRae will know that he's one of the outstanding sports writers of his generation. You know, he's South African, who's been living in the UK for a long time. And he covers a lot of different sports, but his first love is boxing. And there's plenty of Irish interest in this book, too, with chapters on both Daniel Kinahan's takeover of professional boxing and Katie Taylor's lonely passion. And there's a story McRae tells about when he was a young man and he met the great Observer sports writer Hugh McIlvany in a Glasgow pub. And he asked him for advice in writing about boxing. And McIlvany's answer stayed with him and informs much of this book. Ambivalence is going to be your constant companion. And I think when you cover boxing, you know, that does come into play because it's such a there's so much around the sport is toxic. And this, The Last Bell, is a follow-up of sorts to his great book, Dark Trade, from 1998. And also, it's a farewell to boxing in one respect, and he says he's never going to write a book about it again. He will write about it for The Guardian. But what keeps him going to fights are some of the people he comes across. Some are well-known, like the great heavyweight champion from the Ukraine, Usyk, or Irish trainer, former middleweight champion Andy Lee. Others aren't well-known. And McRae digs deep into the story of Patrick Day, an American fighter from an untypical background who lost his life in the ring. Now, while writing this book, McRae was dealing with a lot himself. He lost his sister, his mother, his father, and his mother-in-law, all in the space of 18 brutal months. And he weaves that personal story into this the wider narrative. And it's a fine book, and I'd encourage anyone to get it.
Okay, now we're going to play clips with some of the authors of many of the books, most of whom we've interviewed over the year here on The Last Word. So let's hear Brendan Fanning, who's written Touch and Distance, Ireland's Rugby Battle with Great Expectations. This is where I asked him about the effectiveness of Ireland's rugby system and if it's preventing Ireland from sourcing players of different abilities.
My issue would be that we're victims of our own system because the system is successful and because Ireland are successful relative to our numbers. It has induced a degree of comfort. So we think that everything we are doing is right. And we believe that more and more when other people come in to watch and come over and say, oh, geez, what is the Irish system? We must do. Like the number of times over the years I've had Welsh and Scottish colleagues coming on to me saying, what about the Irish system? How is it so good? How do you produce so many players? And there is no urgency, there is no, Jesus, if we don't fix this, we're in trouble, about finding players who are different, genetically different. So we've a lot of skinny white guys who went to private schools and came through that system and proved themselves disciplined and able to cope with the rigour of that system. And they're brave and they're athletic and most of them are pretty intelligent footballers, but not a lot of them have that X factor, that's something different.
Okay, Kieran Cunningham, what do you make of this book?
To me, it's the Irish sports book of the year, and it would be worthy winner in most years because it's absolutely outstanding. On the front of the book is a blurb from Paul Howard, where he says he learns most of what he knows about rugby from reading Brendan Fanning, and I go along with that. I think he's the best rugby writer to ever come out of Ireland. If you really want to understand Irish rugby in the last 40 years, there's two books you need to read. Brendan's From There to Here, about the road to professionalism and the early years of that, and the highs and lows after that river was crossed. And Touch and Distance takes us up to the modern day. And one of the things to me that stands to Brendan is the fact that he's a coach as well as a journalist. He's coached at all sorts of different levels of clubs and schools and knows everyone worth knowing at Irish rugby. I picked up this book one morning and didn't put it down until I finished it. And that hasn't happened very often with Irish sports books. Fanning's writing style is very engaging. It draws you in. The narrative gallops along at a fine pace. And there's barely a page where you don't learn something new. And it's also so newsworthy. Like there's so many lines that people could have followed up. Stuff that David Nusiforo says about Munster in particular, where he ruffles a few feathers. David Nusiforo was a high performance director of the IRPU for a long time. And the stuff on The school's rugby is fascinating because something a lot of people have a surface knowledge of, but he gets into the nuts and bolts of it, particularly in St. Michael's, who've been very successful and supplied so many players to the Ireland team in recent years, what exactly they do. And he shows some of the uglier sides to school's rugby too.
Okay, Rory McIlroy is the Irish Sports Star of the Year, I think it's fair to say. There's been a book written about him by Timothy Gay, Roryland, the up and down world of golf's global icon. Here's Timothy Gay on the programme recently.
There is no doubt that Rory's biggest enemy is Rory and his unfortunate habit of losing focus and losing sort of the moment in big moments. And he's got to, you know, recognize that he's got this tendency to self-destruct and continue to work to ensure that that doesn't happen. I do think the monkey is off his back. I do think that the win at Augusta has liberated him. And if he could just focus on his short game, which continues to be the weakness in his golf game, and sort of focus on focusing, on being able to sort of fight off the distractions, which has been a problem of his in the past. I think there's a very good chance he'll win more majors.
What did you make of this book, Kieran?
Well, it isn't a great book, and in part it's not even a good book, but, you know, it's still quite readable. And I think it's a book that a lot of people will read because of Rory McIlroy's year. Now, he's set to the unique double of winning both the BBC Sports Personality of the Year and RT Sports Person of the Year awards. And no one could seriously argue he doesn't deserve to do so. And Timothy Gay wasn't given access to those in McIlroy's inner circle. So this book is really a taster for a definitive biography or autobiography down the road. And I think there's a strong case that McIlroy waits until he's well past his peak before he sits down to assess the road he's travelled with proper perspective. Now, if you followed McIlroy's career closely, then there isn't much new in this book, but there are plenty of people who just dip into the majors and Ryder Cup, and this book does give a decent overview of his life and times.
You've picked out a book about Kevin Keegan. Keegan, the Man Who Was King, by Anthony Quinn, former England captain, who, if I remember rightly, I think he comes from Roscommon background, his family, don't they?
That's right, yeah. His grandfather, who he never met, was a miner, and who was actually involved there was a terrible pit disaster where 168 people died, but he rescued a lot of people. He was fated as a hero for it. Now, I was intrigued by this book because Quinn isn't a typical sports biographer. He was film critic for The Independent in the UK for 15 years, and he's written 10 novels. But he knows a good story when he sees one, and Keegan's is a remarkable one. And I was thinking about this. For a lot of the younger generation, if you're under 50, you barely remember Keegan as a manager, and you definitely don't remember him as a player. And he was an extraordinary, his story is extraordinary. He was obsessed with football from a young age, particularly with becoming a professional goalkeeper. But his lack of height, he stopped growing at 5'7", scuppered that dream. He went on trial to Doncaster Rovers. They told him he was too small, sent him away. He got a chance with Scunthorpe United in the fourth division. He was determined to grab it. And 6 years later, he was winning the European Cup with Liverpool. He went on to become won two Ballon d'Ors in a row with Hamburg and a team that didn't win the European Cup, which is remarkable. And then, you know, he had this, the flip side to his personality, the obsessive side, was he was nicknamed Andy McDaft at Liverpool because of his fondness for pranks. Now, what many people will know is the famous clip when he said, "I'd love it if we beat them," when his Newcastle team blew up in the finishing straight against
Manchester United.
When they set to win the title, Manchester United won the title. And he also quit in the toilets after an England defeat to Germany when he was England manager. But Quinn makes the point that, you know, memories linger, and Newcastle fans remember the football that team played, and they remember Keegan very fondly. And he is a remarkable figure in the history of the game.
All right. You also liked David Gillick's book written with Cathal Dennehy, The Race, The Inside Track and the Ruthless World of Elite Athletics. Why so?
Yeah. And as I said about Brendan Fanning being the outstanding rugby writer, Cathal Dennehy is the outstanding athletics writer that we've ever had. I think, you know, he's got a global reputation. He works for a lot of outlets all over the world. You know, he's not just a factor in Ireland. And he tells Gillick's story, which a lot of people might think they're familiar with, but he tells it very well. And he opens a door to give an insight into a very distinctive personality. You know, the book builds along, the first half of the book, you know, goes along various major championships. He won, you know, double European indoor medals. He had a miserable experience at the Beijing Olympics. But in the book's second half, it really takes off. It goes to another level. Killick's move to Florida has opened his eyes to the doping culture swirling all around him. 2012 in London was his target, but injury put him off track. He didn't go to that Olympics. At the end of that year, he lost his annual funding for Sport Ireland. He lost his sponsorship deal with Adidas. He was selling runners in a sports shop. Didn't hear anything from either Sport Ireland or Athletics Ireland, not even a text. 2 years later, on his wedding day to Charlotte, he was in floods of tears, but it was due to the emptiness he felt since his running career ended. He pulled himself back from the abyss and he's carved out different niches for himself. But the raw honesty of this book is a reminder of the troubled afterlife of so many sports people.
Well, talking of troubled afterlives of sports people, there aren't many GAA books, but one is a different type of GAA book, The Dodger by Eimear Ní Fhreánán, the book about DJ Carey.
Yeah, it's... You know, everyone now knows that DJ Carey was sentenced to 5.5 years in prison for conning various people out of €400,000 after falsely claiming of cancer. What we don't really know is why he did it. We can guess that his craving for the high life pushed him to his awful acts, but we don't know for sure. And his profile was so high and he was so well connected that he could surely have had a very good lifestyle without this fraud. Now, Eimear Ní Fhreánán spent a long time in Carey's trail, talking to many of those who thought his story, who bought his story and coughed up. And even the Leinster Council, the GAA, came close to dipping into their players' benevolent fund. Carey turned up at their door talking about multiple melioma, and showed what he said were scars from cancer surgery on his skull. And the scariest part is Ní Fhreánán reckons the real figure he took is very way north of what came out in court, and plenty of people he burned still won't talk to her because it was DJ, because nobody wants to believe the hurling god at feet of clay. But this book is very important, a very important story, and one that is still simply unbelievable.
Okay, I'm going to pick out one now as well, the other GAA book of the year. Mark O'Shea, of course, is a regular contributor to The Last Word, and Adrian Russell is also a terrific writer who worked with him on O'Shea, a Kerry family, a football dynasty. Let's hear a little bit of Mark talking about a run-in he had with his brother Tomás after Tomás criticised him for one of his performances against Dublin late in his career.
There I was marking Bernard Brogan. We were absolutely destroyed in the middle of the field and it was like the sea was opening up in front of me. Bernard was kicking points for fun. And the following day...
But that wasn't your fault. It was all the fact that it was out further out the pitch. The ball was for nuts. Yeah.
You like the way I put that one in there. Yeah. But and then, of course, Tomás wrote his article the following day and threw me under the bus and threw Aidan O'Mahony under the bus and fell out with him for a bit after that.
But how long did it take to repair relationships?
Two days, I'd say. We'd be a kind of a family nomad. We just say it straight out and it's done, you know. But it was interesting, actually, at the launch the last night, the Gooch, Tomás said, somebody said, have you anything nice to say about your brother? And Tomás said, we're not really a lovey-dovey family. And the Gooch turned around and he says, I'm not so sure about that. I remember I had fisticuffs with Mark one day and Tomás was straight in to help out and Dara and Fergal hadn't even reached at that stage, he says.
They're all piling in on my behalf. I really loved the stuff about West Kerry and growing up in West Kerry. I thought that was probably the strongest part of the book. Other GAA books, I think, that are worth mentioning, Michael Moynihan's More Than a Game, the GAA and Where It's Going, and also Kieran Murphy's Old Parish Notes on Hurling, taking up the game at the age of 41. But in the time we have, there's one other book I want to play a clip from. One of the most impressive interviewees that came in recent times was the Irish rugby international Andrew Porter, talking about his book Heart in My Sleeve.
It's strange because like I'd always look forward to training at the end of the school day, and I even remember kind of the way I was feeling at the time. I could feel it so well. Like I suppose the lightheadedness, even just going out to train, because I'd be honest,
you just didn't have enough calories in you for the energy.
Absolutely nothing. But it was my love of rugby that just got me out onto the pitch, got my boots on and got out there. But I suppose it was. The biggest thing was, I suppose, my family. They were the ones who were always there for me, the ones who I thought I was completely on my own when I was going through it. And then it kind of clicked that they were the ones that I was hurting.
Kieran, it's unusual for a player still playing, only 30 years of age, if even that, to write an autobiography. But he has a story to tell, doesn't he? And he tells it with fantastic honesty.
He does. And I know that this did win Sports Book of the Year at the awards here. And, you know, it's a deserved winner. Like, it's one of the better, like, you can get fed up in a way sometimes that a lot of the books that get honoured are ghosted autobiographies. But this is different. You know, this is different level story. It's okay. A human interest story. Even if you had no interest in rugby, I think you'd be interested in this book.
It's a great book. Andrew Porter, Heart on My Sleeve. Kieran Cunningham, thank you.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.